This is I Choose Life News and Views, sponsored by Indiana Right to Life and Allen County Right to Life, committed to defending innocent human life for all people of all ages. Your hosts are Kathy Humbarger, Amanda Banks, and Scott Kump.
Welcome to I Choose Life News and Views. I'm Kathy Humbarger.
I'm Amanda Banks.
And I'm Scott Kump. Choose Life News and Views is a joint project of Allen County Right to Life, Indiana Right to Life, and Bot Radio Network in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
And now the pro-life news.
This is your AFA Indiana News Minute. A new fact-based independent film exploring the most prolific serial killer in American history has managed to get more financial backing than acclaimed director Spike Lee's movie about human beings who are addicted to blood. The two film projects, the newest, hottest Spike Lee joint, and Gosnell, have their record-breaking crowd-funded success in common. But where that money came from and the subsequent media attention are vastly different. Spike Lee had enormous publicity, but yet could only get 6,000 people to contribute to his film on the crowdfunding website Kickstarter. Gosnell has raised $1.5 million from nearly 16,000 contributors on the website Indiegogo. Fela McAleer, a producer of the movie about notorious Philadelphia abortionist Kermit Gosnell, said it shows there is a demand for these types of stories to be told. There's more online at afain.net.
Mother's Day is an opportunity to thank all mothers for saying yes to life. Each Mother's Day, Allen County Right to Life sponsors the Carnation Project. On May 11th, Allen County Right to Life will continue this tradition when local churches will have beautiful carnations available before and after masses and services. Purchasing carnations are a wonderful way to say, I love you, to the important woman in your life, while helping us continue to defend innocent life from conception to natural death. If you are interested in becoming a Carnation Project coordinator for your church, please visit our website, ichooselife.org, or call 260-471-1849. That's ichooselife.org or 260-471-1849.
Pro-life and pro-decency forces have been allies for many years, but as my guest today says, we have yet to truly partner to bring about a full culture of life. I'm Amanda Banks, and today I'm very pleased to be joined by my friend, former colleague, and a much respected leader in the pro-decency movement, Daniel Weiss. Daniel, welcome to I Choose Life News and Views.
Thank you, Amanda. It's great to be on your show and great to be speaking with you again.
Absolutely. Well, it's fun for me to speak to someone I know and appreciate, and I'm just looking forward to this discussion today. You know, I was thinking, Daniel, as I prepared for our interview, that maybe someone listening, or maybe many people listening today, say, pro-decency, what is that? Maybe not a term that they're familiar with. So even though I think most of our listeners would certainly identify themselves as pro-decency, let's start off by just defining that. What does it mean to say I'm pro-decency, or I'm in the pro-decency movement?
I think it is maybe a little bit of a new word, but I think it replaces more of a negative formulation. People have been known to be anti-pornography activists. And I think it's very important to define what you're for, not what you're against. And I think particularly the way our culture has changed in the last 10 years, people don't really want to be known for what they're against anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so when groups advocate against things, it kind of makes some people reluctant to engage on those issues, even if they believe in them and believe in them deeply. So I think we're really called to stand up for what we believe in and to be a witness for the good, the true, and the beautiful. So, you know, for pro-decency, we might define it as people that, you know, are advocating for a modest and healthy media culture, especially as it relates to what children are being exposed to. Pro-decency advocates would probably advocate for clean and safe neighborhoods that are free from the corrupting and sometimes criminal influences of sex shops, strip clubs, and prostitution. And I think pro-decency folks are for healthy family interactions and media-safe homes. I think so. Pro-decency is pro-family for sure, but I think it's also pro-community, pro-culture, and pro-truth.
Mm.
And, you know, and this is one of the things I think where we really do connect with the pro-life movement, because so much of our work is the same as what the pro-life movement is doing, and that's uncovering and proclaiming the truth about what it means to be human. So, you know, life advocates are working to restore the truth that every life is sacred and worthy of protection at all stages. And I think there needs to be, you know, a wider understanding here. You know, a robust pro-life, pro-family, pro-decency ethic also has to proclaim the sanctity of marriage and family and preserve the essential distinctives of male and female.
Mm. That's a lot, obviously. And thank you for taking time to really give us a full picture of what that means. Because as we delve into this topic today, we're basically going to be looking at the relationship between abortion specifically and pornography specifically, but those are part of then the pro-life and the pro-decency movements. And so that's where kind of we're beginning with that overhead view of where these ideas, these ethics come from. And as we then transition into that, Daniel, I did mention in my introduction that we are former colleagues, and maybe some of our listeners know that I used to work at Focus on the Family. That's where I met Daniel. We were both working in the public policy department, attempting to advance pro-family values in state and federal government. But after Daniel left Focus on the Family, in 2012, he founded the Brush Fires Foundation. And the mission of Brush Fires is to help people discover and live out God's design for sexuality and relationships. Before we go in any further, Daniel, why don't you take a moment to tell us just how you were led to start this ministry and where the formation of the ministry came from?
Sure. Well, you're right, Amanda, and I do remember my time at Focus fondly. I spent almost 9 years there, and many of them with you, standing side by side on some pretty key battles. And so I had that time engaging the culture with you and then separately as well. But how Brush Fires came about is really we had to focus on our family. We had four kids at the time, and we really were separated from our family. We both grew up in Wisconsin. So we felt God leading us back home, and I couldn't keep my job at Focus and move, so we made that decision. And I really was faced with the crossroads choice of whether to continue doing this kind of work or to do something different, just based on the opportunities available here. And I really felt God leading me to continue doing this kind of advocacy for families and for relationships and for children. And so that led to the foundation of the Brush Fires Foundation. I think it's really important to define why we named it that, because our name really is so much a part of what we're doing. And we took our name from a Sam Adams quote, one of our founding fathers. And he said, "It doesn't take a majority to prevail, but an irate, tireless minority keen on setting brush fires of freedom in people's minds." And we're not irate. We're very positive in defining of what we're for, but we are tireless. And sometimes we know very clearly that we're in the minority. But we also think that this idea of setting brush fires is very much what we're about. And I think what we're trying to do is help people see that the most important brush fire starts in our own heart, because we can't give to people what we don't have ourselves. And so this kind of this light, this transformation happens at the individual level, and then it can spread into the family. And when the family begins to be healthy and to be healed, that can spread into the community. So it's really a kind of a grassroots healing and transformation from the bottom up. And I think you know, a lot of the work we've done in the past together had a top-down approach. And so I think we're trying something a little different there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's one other point in our mission statement. We are calling people, we're helping people discover and live out God's design for sexuality and relationships, but we also are equipping people to spark change by serving others. And I think it's that service point, what we call engaging others, is a key part of this as well.
Definitely. It's a unique part of your foundation, I think. And as we get going here, if you're just joining us, I'm Amanda Banks, and I'm speaking with Daniel Weiss, who's the founder and president of the Brush Fires Foundation. Daniel, what are some of your goals and the even specific projects right now at Brush Fires?
Well, we're still, I think, a relatively new organization. We're just in existence 2 years now. So we do a lot of our outreach online, and our website has a lot of great resources on pornography and recovering and healing, and also helping people understand God's design for sexuality. We have resources for the church and a lot more. But I think behind the scenes, we're also working to equip leaders to address these matters within their own spheres of influence. And I want to say we have a particular burden for the church. and equipping pastors on how to address sexual wholeness and sexual brokenness in positive and loving ways. One of the projects we're working on this year is to develop an online course on what we're a positive Christian teaching on sexuality. And what I mean by that is we're talking about our created identity, male and female, and what God calls us to. It's not a course, you know, on tips and techniques.
Right.
But it's about revealing the truth of who we are. Another project we're working on is to start a prayer ministry to help Christians begin to address this sexual and relational brokenness, really to engage it at a spiritual level prior to launching out with some of these projects, you know, in the physical realm. I think that prayer cover and appealing to God at a deep spiritual level is something I think that's missing in our movement.
Right.
And we just feel the need and the call. And we're not doing this on our own. We've been working to develop partnerships and alliances with other ministries. So this is truly a collaborative effort. And really, honestly, we have so much work. We have a huge vision, but we're trying to take it one step at a time and expand as God leads us.
Absolutely. Well, that's very exciting. I love to hear about where God's leading you. And then as you just seek to have the wisdom to prioritize, I know you said there is so much work that you feel can be done and should be done, must be done.
Yeah.
But like you said, it's one step at a time. So as you go after this kind of monster of a mission and a vision, one theme that you have taken some time to explore more deeply is this relationship between pornography and abortion. In my opinion, it's a much needed and very important endeavor, and I'm very grateful that you're doing the work to bring light to it. So can you start, Daniel, by telling us just some of the similarities that you see between these two things that maybe up until this point, our listeners would join me in thinking they're separate or they're, you know, they're not related, pornography and abortion. How are they similar?
Yeah, I think just to address that, one of the things we're also doing is we're trying to fill gaps that mm-hmm. we see. And I think this is one of those gaps where we have maybe two cultural evils that kind of stand side by side in people's minds. And I think some people feel the need to choose, well, I'm going to really focus my efforts on the pro-life movement, or I'm going to focus on, you know, the pro-family movement or the pro-decency movement. And I think what we see is there's a need to bridge that. And part of that goes into the deep foundational messages that are inherent to both of these issues.
Right.
And I think what stands out to me initially is just a very utilitarian view of the person. You know, that people are objects that can be used and abused or discarded if they're no longer needed. You know, so much of our culture has basically just completely ignored or rejected the spiritual component of the person and even the emotional components of the person. And so if people, and we see this all throughout culture, if people are simply exist for another's use, then what happens if they're not useful anymore, right? They're discarded. And I think you see this in pornography, where women in particular, but also men, are just kind of seen as sex-crazed robots. There's no soul or humanity there. And to be perfectly blunt, I mean, the humanity of the person in pornography is visually degraded before the viewer's eyes. It's a very intentional dehumanizing in order to be able to perpetrate that kind of abuse on someone. Some people might have a vision of pornography of what it was maybe 50 years ago, kind of a pinup modeling, kind of coy nudity, and it really isn't that at all. It's very violent, aggressive, verbally abusive. It's kind of destructive violence now, and that's really what mainstream pornography is. And so I think when you look at that kind of violence and aggression in pornography, it's easy to see the parallels with abortion. You have babies that are very inconvenient, right? I mean, I know you have some children, and I do too. I've got five little ones, and they can be very inconvenient at times. Being a parent, you know, takes a great deal of self-control. But, you know, when you're trying to be a parent or when you're faced with that choice and you're trying to grapple with those issues in a culture that throws people away routinely, it's very difficult to make a proper choice, I think. We have a culture of five-minute celebrity, you know. We have a culture that neglects people. It's a culture of death. And that's just one of the ways I think they're connected. Honestly, we see abortion very clearly as kind of a war or an attack on children. But, you know, pornography really has quite a war on children, too. And it takes more time than we have to get into that. But briefly, you know, pornography is very intentional in training the viewers to sexually desire children by dressing up the actresses to look like children. Pornography goes after children online. It goes to the places that kids congregate online and tries to hook them in. And, you know, it actually gets worse, too. And I think that connection that we're talking about and want to explore a little bit today is worth talking about, too.
Absolutely. Again, I'm Amanda Banks, and speaking today to Daniel Weiss from the Brush Fires Foundation about the link between pornography and abortion. Research surrounding this theme is quite interesting. Why don't we just start with some of the numbers, Daniel, from this adolescent research study in 2008. First off, finding that in this through this study that most young adults want to get married and have children, but a majority of them also believe that pornography is an acceptable way to express their sexuality.
Yeah, I think, and it's worth noting up front, we've begun looking into this issue, and what I'm finding is there really isn't a lot of direct, heavy scientific research on this. So the study we're talking about noticed some correlations that I don't think had really been made before. And the study you're referring to came out in the Journal of Adolescent Research in 2008, and it was measuring risky behaviors in college-age adults, adults ages 18 to 26. And what it found was two-thirds of the men and half of the women felt that pornography was an acceptable lifestyle choice. And it further found that 86% of the men and 31% of the women had used pornography within the past year. So you're looking at a generation that largely agrees with pornography use and even more significantly largely uses it.
Mm-hmm. So then, Daniel, what other telling data was found in this study regarding the use of pornography and sexuality and in regards to the number of sexual partners and the acceptance of sex outside of marriage?
That's where some of these results became rather interesting. The researchers found, quote, a significant connection between pornography use and number of lifetime sexual partners, and also their acceptance of extramarital sexual behavior. And the researchers also note the more men accepted and used pornography, the more likely they were to be accepting of premarital and casual sexual behavior. And they found out that daily pornography users had, on average, nearly five times more sexual partners than non-users had. Mm. And this was also true for the young women. They found that the women who accepted and used pornography had a significantly higher levels of acceptance of casual sexual behavior and to report higher numbers of sexual partners within the last 12 months and across their lifetimes. So you've got this, I mean, maybe this seems obvious, but sometimes you need the data to make these points more clearly. So you've got people that use and approve of pornography. They're engaging in more casual sex with more people than those who don't use it or approve of it. And I think this is where we begin to see how pornography and abortion can be actually more related than we might have suspected, because you have people that are engaging in kind of, it didn't measure whether they were engaging in kind of risky sexual practices without contraception, but they were certainly engaging with more lifetime partners, and the incidence or the likelihood of pregnancy is much higher. And so, you know, you've got this greater chance, this greater opportunity to create new life in the behaviors. But I think further research there showed that pornography also decreased their desire to have kids. So again, like you said just a moment ago, the study found that of everyone they studied, and it was something like 700 or 800 young adults, but among all of them, they all had relatively high levels of child-centeredness, and this was determined by responses to statements like, having children is a very important goal for me. So everyone had a fairly high level of child-centeredness. However, the people that accepted pornography as no big deal, there was a significant correlation with lower levels of child-centeredness. So those that approved of pornography, even more than the correlation was stronger with those that approved of it than used it, but they were less likely to want children. You know, and I think if we look at this and look at it carefully, you know, as an isolated piece of data, that's probably relatively benign. But again, you have to understand that the research from Guttmacher shows that half of all pregnancies in the U.S. are unintended, right, and 40% of those end in abortion. So you've got people engaging who are involved with pornography, engaging in more casual sex. They're more likely to be engaged in premarital sexual behavior, and they're less likely to want kids out of it. Mm. So, I mean, you start to put those together, and you're seeing some what seem to be isolated data points that start to correlate into basically an antinatalism, you know, a desire to not want the children.
Mm. I think it's profound, and it makes my head hurt a little bit, you know, to put all these things together. But like you said, we don't have a direct study. I don't know if that's quite the right way to say it. We don't have a study that, you know, you commissioned to find out exactly what we right. want to know, but we have some data here that is very telling. And if you take the time to dig into it, like you have, you come out and say, aha, this is all matching up. And there is indeed a relationship here. There's got to be a correlation here. It seems very clear. So where do you go from here, Daniel? You've certainly scratched the surface, looking for, you know, how do these topics of abortion and pornography relate? What's your vision for kind of where, how you want to move forward? I know you don't want to stop here, correct?
Right. And I think we need to be careful as we talk about this, because I mean, I'm admitting, and I'm telling your listeners, we're making a bit of a jump here. Mm-hmm. We need more data. That's true. We need more data before we can make some solid connections here. And I hope we can get that data. I'm going to certainly be searching for it and talking with researchers after this, just as we move along with this project. But even with the data we have, I think the way we're approaching it is, you know, if the pro-life movement has as its goal to save children, then we need to look at all the factors that may have some influence here. And I think these are some of the outlier factors that people haven't maybe fully considered as an impact on people's choices. And I think even with this little bit of research in this one study, we have enough here that it warrants a closer look and it warrants more study. And so that's really where we're at this point. Mm. And I feel like, again, based on the messages in pornography, those are real correlations that are going to stick in further study.
Mm.
But even as we consider this, you know, you're right. There's a lot we can do now. And I think, as you said in your intro, the pro-life and pro-decency or pro-family forces, we've been allies. And most people and many people listening here are going to find themselves in both of those camps.
Right.
But I think what we need to do is to begin to explore ways how we can truly serve one another and align ourselves with one another more closely to bring about a full culture of life.
Right.
You know, if we care about children in the womb and the men and women who have joined to create that child, we've really got to be more serious about addressing these negative impacts of pornography. And I think, again, when we talk about lighting small fires, this really begins in the home. And I think, you know, to the listener out there, you know, what are you going to do today? You can start by teaching the young people you know the truth about sexuality. You know, you can help to encourage them to pursue a higher calling in marriage and parenting. Then really, I think the sexually regressive life our culture promotes, I think everybody can stand up to this commercialized culture that objectifies people. And that's in everything. That's in sports marketing. That's in advertising. That's in fashion, music, film. And we especially need to protect our children from that. And as far as pornography goes and the commercialized sex industry, we have a lot of good laws on the books. And Amanda, you and I actually were part of that advocacy to get some of those laws passed. The problem is we just don't enforce the laws we have. And we could do a significant amount of cleanup in our neighborhoods and in our entire culture if we'd simply enforce the existing laws.
Right. And Daniel, I don't think people understand that. I'm not in the pro-family movement to the degree that I once was. And I forget, yes, the laws are on the books. You cannot stream, you know, pornography over the internet. And, you know, that's just one example. Or you've got the, you know, in the hotel room or this or that or the other. But we don't have law enforcement that is willing to prosecute. Do you have information on your website, you know, about not only the lack of prosecution, but you also mentioned the importance of teaching healthy sexuality in the home and standing up to the commercialized sex culture? Any resources there, Daniel, where people could look to find out, you know, how can I really do these things? How can I become involved in this fight?
Yeah, we do. In fact, if you go to our homepage at brushfiresfoundation.org, you're going to see in the lower part of it about 9 or 10 different categories that you can click on. And whether that's protecting your home or whether that's creating a decent or safe community, you can click right on there and get some resources just exactly the way you're talking. And I think you're right. There is so much work to be done. And people, you know, one of the reasons I've continued in this fight and in this endeavor is because I see people losing hope. And the truth is there's so much work that can be done. And if we would simply do the small things, again, it would open up the possibility to do some of these larger things that we desire to do. And I think that's the idea of the small fire, the brush fire. A small fire on its own isn't going to put out that much light and heat. But when these smaller fires start to join together, they can become quite big. And I think that's the vision here, is just work in your own area of influence, whether it's in your home or whether it's in your church or whether it's in your community, and that inspires others to get involved too and to start engaging on these issues. And I think that's true for any issue you're talking about. It's simply doing the small bit you're called to, and I think others are going to be inspired by that.
Mm. Well, thank you for that. Again, if you didn't get the website address, it's brushfiresfoundation.org. And you've been listening to Daniel Weiss, the founder of the Brush Fires Foundation. Daniel, thank you so much for taking the time to not only speak to us today, but to prepare for this interview with all of the research that you did. And I know it's a work in progress. I look forward to hearing more and even being part of that work. It's definitely important work, and I'm grateful that you're doing it.
Well, I'm so thankful to be on here with you, Amanda, and I'm so grateful for the work you're doing as well.
If you or someone you know is dealing with grief and pain after an abortion decision, call 877-791-5475. You'll be referred to a crisis pregnancy center in your area, a place where free and confidential services are available. That's 877-791-5475.
You've been listening to I Choose Life News and Views. If you have questions about this program or if you'd like to support the fight for life, please call 260-471-1849 or go to ichooselife.org, because without the right to life, no other rights matter.